Have started. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Welcome to ICANN's Policy Update Webinar. My name is David Olive, Vice President for Policy Development, and I'm happy to present today the second policy update, which is now set to become a recurring event ahead of the ICANN meetings in order to provide interested parties with an update on policy development activities to help all of us prepare and focus our efforts.
Thank you.
In addition to the policy update webinar, our policy team is also in the process of preparing an outreach policy program that will focus on newcomers and provide an introduction into how the policy development takes place and how one can get involved and participate. Stay tuned for more information in the near future. There is a lot of information contained in this presentation. The slides and recordings will be made available following this session so that everyone has an opportunity to review the information at their leisure. A few housekeeping items to begin with as the introduction, I have to do this. To reduce interference, please mute your phones. There will be an opportunity to answer questions at the end of the sessions, and then we can unmute the line for that purpose. This is an Adobe Connect room, and the slides will be viewed and questions posted. And there's the link to this room is in the email that you received with the invitation. There will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end. However, during this session, you can submit questions in the chat box that is below the Adobe Connect window, and we'll do our best to answer your questions. In case questions arise on the meeting or to follow up on any of the discussions, please feel free to contact us at policy-staff@icann.org. One note of caution, please do not use the Call Me button that is used for recording this session. And at the end of the session, of course, please state your name, and you'll be added to the queue, or you can use the feature of raising your hand in Adobe Connect, and we'll recognize you for that purpose. The goals of the session, ICANN, of course, Nairobi meeting. Many of you are planning to participate there, either in person or remotely, recognizing that for this meeting, many participants will be looking for remote participation and service and special attention. So we're putting our efforts to making sure that we have a more standardized approach in the remote sessions, a more level playing field for participants irrespective of the bandwidth they have, and create a more equivalent experience for those participating in the room, those outside. And we'll also have monitoring services during the sessions. So for further details on the remote services provided, you can contact the Nairobi website at ICANN. In addition to a number of policy-related activities that will be highlighted throughout this presentation, there are a number of other important sessions taking place in Nairobi, such as a new GTLD update, an expression of interest panel session, affirmation of commitments discussion, fiscal 2011 operating plan and budget consultations, and the abuse of the DNS forum. Again, for further information, this is all posted on our website for the Nairobi conference. Turning to policy developed at ICANN, the focus of this presentation is our policy development process, and as most of you are aware, the following bodies are responsible for such policy development. The GNSO develops policy recommendations applicable to the generic top-level domains. The country code supporting organizations develop policy recommendations applicable to the country code managers, and the addressing supporting organization reviews and develops recommendations on internet protocol address policy. The advice provided at ICANN is done by the supporting organizations that have the capacity to develop policy recommendations, and as we know, there are a number of advisory committees that provide advice to the ICANN board. And so we look at the topics covered, slides 7 through 9. We'll give you an overview of this session. It might be worth putting out one note that this is just a selection of activities going on in the different supporting organizations, the highlights, if you will. And for further details, we ask you to go to the respective supporting organization websites where there is more detail available. Well, I'll now turn to experts on our policy staff to present various parts of this program. And starting off with GNSO, I turn to Rob Hogarth. Rob, please.
Thank you, David. Good day, everybody. Welcome, and thank you all very much for joining us. It looks like we have a really good turnout. In terms of an overall view of the GNSO policy issues, we have a wide range of issues that we're currently working on. The list on slide 11 reflects a number of the issues we'll be talking about today, but there are a total of about 17 working groups and work teams currently underway, varying from the very specific technical items like inter-registrar transfer policy to much more general but just as important management and administrative organizational type issues like the GNSO restructuring and improvements area. And that's the first area we're going to talk about today, GNSO improvements. It's an important issue for the GNSO community because, of course, the GNSO is the primary policy driver and maker for the generic namespace. Like the other supporting organizations and advisory committees in ICANN, the GNSO is subject to regular reviews. And there were some real critical objectives that the community identified for a review of the GNSO back in the 2007 timeframe that we are still, and this is a hint to all of you in the ALAC, that the GNSO is still implementing. The process was very long and involved. There was a lot of public input and comment, a lot of community participation, both online, in person, and through comment forums. And the three fundamental areas that the review improvements effort focused on were maximizing participation of members of the community in the policy development process, a real emphasis on reexamining the policy development process itself and seeing how it could be improved in terms of how it's conducted, what sort of preparatory work goes into it, and how various members of the community can participate in a substantial and realistic way. And then a general recognition that throughout our community, regardless of our SO or AC, it's very important to make sure that we're communicating in an effective manner and also making sure that everyone who's participating has the appropriate administrative and staff support. Now, the GNSO improvements area really focused in five major goals and expectations. Those are reflected on slide 14. The real critical sort of touchstone of all of the areas of improvement was the GNSO Council and the restructuring of that body from, in a sense, a legislative body that did a lot of the detail work to becoming more of a strategic manager and coordinator for policy development. And that's important because one of the goals of the improvements effort was to really move the new policy development process to a working group model of policy development. And, you know, the anticipation of that was that there would be much more community participation, many more groups coming to the table to participate in an organized fashion, and mechanisms that could exist that would provide the broadest possible substantial participation in policy development. Pieces of those important areas of improvement also included enhancing the structures of the GNSO, the constituencies that continue to exist in the process, as well as a new structure that we're calling stakeholder groups that I'll talk about in a moment. And then, of course, finally, one of those major areas that I touched on in the goals in the previous slide, the importance of improving communications, not just within the GNSO, but between the GNSO and other bodies. Slide 15 basically just gives you an overall picture of the new structure of the GNSO Council and how it's set up. I could spend 45 minutes talking with you all about the details of that slide, and so I'm not going to do that today. But suffice to say that the fundamental framework and model, as you can see with the outlined areas on this slide, is that the GNSO Council now is essentially formed through a bicameral House structure in which the interests of contracted parties and the interests of non-contracted parties in the GNSO are balanced. And through a lot of community discussions, that balance is reflected through voting thresholds, operating procedures, and just the structure and makeup of how counselors are ultimately appointed or selected for participation on the GNSO Council. I'd be delighted to answer any questions offline about the details of this slide or, you know, in separate fora, talk to you all about how those processes work. Fundamentally, what you can see on this slide is that in addition to the two-party houses that exist, the fundamental structure of constituencies remains, but there's this new piece that we call stakeholders or stakeholder groups that are reflected by the registries, the registrars, the commercial stakeholders, and the non-commercial stakeholders in the GNSO. Now, currently what's happened is that in Seoul, the new council was seated. That took a tremendous amount of community effort that included bylaw amendments, a lot of real challenging discussions about operating procedures, how the council would transition to the new structure. That's now all in place. As I noted, these stakeholder group structures were created. The board has approved permanent stakeholder group charters for the contracted side of the GNSO, for the registry and registrar stakeholder groups. The stakeholder groups on the non-contracted side of the GNSO, the commercial stakeholder group and the non-commercial stakeholder group, are currently operating under transitional or temporary charters that the community members are still discussing and that the board hopes will be resolved by the Latin America ICANN meeting later this year. Currently, and in a critical part of the GNSO improvements work, is a collection of work teams and steering committees that are at work within the GNSO who are focusing on the five main areas that you see on slide 17. We've got a work team that's currently getting quite far along in discussing the policy development process, how that can be improved, modified, adjusted. So that work is a critical piece of the effort. We also have a work team that's focused on developing the working group model of policy development, where ultimately the GNSO Council will essentially create a charter document that then a working group made up of a broad cross-section of community members will participate in. And that group actually has produced some general guidelines that have been posted for public comment. And so we hope members of the community will have an opportunity to look at that and comment on that. There's a very critical work team that was tasked with developing and now revising the council's operating procedures. That involves some very technical work in terms of reading the bylaws, looking at past practices of the GNSO, and trying to create mechanisms and systems that support that balanced GNSO council structure. Another important work team is the constituency and stakeholder group operations work team. Their focus and goal has been to develop operating processes and procedures that are going to assist and make sure that the various stakeholder groups and constituencies within the GNSO operate on a level playing field so that everyone is comfortable that although they won't have precisely the same operating procedures or specific mechanisms, that at the very least there is a commonality so that any member of the community can be comfortable that those structures are operating transparently, openly, in a fair manner. And then finally, a work team that is pretty much concluding a significant portion of its work in the last week or two that's focusing on communications improvements. A big piece of that they have made some significant progress on is a design for a new GNSO website and other technical considerations that will make working groups, collaborative efforts, comment forums, and the rest operate much more efficiently. In terms of next steps, leading up to Nairobi and then between Nairobi and Brussels, we're going to continue to see a lot of efforts and work taking place in the various work teams. Another important component of this process of GNSO improvements is that review of the existing constituencies, something the board has called a reconfirmation process. And those efforts will likely continue through the Nairobi and up through the Brussels meeting by the individual communities. There's also going to be, as I mentioned before, continued work within the communities with respect to the permanent charters for the commercial stakeholder group and the non-commercial stakeholder group. And then, as many of you have heard and perhaps seen in the comment forums, since the board approved these new structures almost 18 months ago, we've had several proposals by various stakeholders for new GNSO constituencies. Four have been filed to date. The board has processed through three of those. There's still a pending proposal for a consumer's constituency, and there are a couple of others in the works, some that you may see before Nairobi, others likely after Nairobi, where other interested community groups are thinking about forming new GNSO constituencies where they will seek further community input and comment. So it's a very long and involved process, one that's very important to ensuring fairness across the GNSO spectrum, and staff and members of the community who are working on that certainly welcome additional input, feedback, contributions to their efforts. So please reach out to Glenn, the secretariat for the GNSO. Her email address is identified there in slide 19 if you're interested in helping out or contributing to the effort. Also, we've set up a GNSO improvements information webpage. The link is produced on slide 19 there, and we welcome you to go there, check for some of the latest developments, find background information, find board resolutions and the rest. It's sort of a one-stop shop for everything related to the improvements effort in the GNSO. I'm going to conclude there. Please feel free to ask questions on the chat room, at the bottom of the screen. Also, we'll be hanging around at the end of this call for questions as well. Thanks a lot, and Marika, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you very much, Rob. Good evening, everyone, and thank you very much for joining. I'll be talking first about the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy, also known as IRTP. This is a GNSO consensus policy that was actually adopted in 2004 with the objective to provide registrants with a transparent and predictable way to transfer domain name registrations between registrars. As part of the implementation of that policy, it was decided to carry out a review of the policy in order to determine whether it was actually working as intended or whether there were any areas that would benefit from further clarification or improvement. And as a result of that review, a number of issues were identified that were then grouped together in five different policy development processes, also known as PDPs, which were titled from A to E and which are being addressed in a consecutive manner. PDP working group is now considering the issues part of the group titled B, hence the name IRTP Part B PDP Working Group. So this working group is reviewing a number of issues that relate to the return of a domain name registration that has been inappropriately transferred, either as a result of a hijacking or other conflict, and reviewing whether a separate process or provision should be introduced to address such instances. In addition, the group is discussing a number of questions that relate to the use of registrar lock status. So this policy development process was initiated in June 2009, and since then the working group has been discussing the charter questions in parallel to soliciting public comments as well as constituency and stakeholder group inputs. As required by the working group charter, the ICANN compliance team has been playing an active role in this working group and has more specifically provided data on the level of complaints and topics about which ICANN receives complaints in relation to the transfer policy to help inform the deliberations of the working group. A draft initial report has already been developed, which aims to capture the different discussion and positions. And the next step for this working group will now be to agree on recommendations for the different charter questions and publish our initial report for public comment and discussion. There's no meeting planned at the Nairobi meeting. So this slide is just to provide you with a snapshot of the information that has been provided by the ICANN compliance team, as referred to in the previous slide, which confirms that issues related to unlocking of domain name registrations, wrongful denial, but also lack of understanding of how the transfer policy works are some of the main reasons of complaints received by ICANN from registrants in relation to the IRTP. Information like this has helped to inform the deliberations of the working group, as well as serving as supporting evidence as to why it is important to address these issues from a registrant perspective. So even though this working group is well underway and new members are always welcome, Although you might want to hold out for some of the upcoming IRTP PDPs that will address issues related to dispute policy enhancements, penalties for IRTP violations, and operational rule enhancements. In addition, you will find on this slide some links to background documents as well as the working group workspace. So a second policy development process that is currently underway is about post-expiration domain name recovery. This is an issue that was brought to the GNSO by the At-Large Advisory Committee, which raised a number of questions in relation to the predictability and transparency of existing expiration and renewal policies and practices. In addition to those issues, the working group is also addressing questions like, do registrants have adequate opportunity to redeem their domain name registration following expiration? And is there adequate notice that a domain name registration is about to expire? This working group is expected to make recommendations to the GNSO Council for best practices and or changes to existing or proposals for new consensus policies. So in order to help inform the deliberations of the working group, a survey was conducted that reviewed the renewal and expiration practices of the top 10 GTLD registrars, which account for approximately 69% of GTLD registrations. This survey found that there's a lot of variation amongst registrars in relation to renewal and expiration practices, and part of the working group's discussion now focuses on this question, whether variation is a good or a bad thing. For further details on the registrar survey, I would recommend that you visit the working group workspace where you can find further details. In addition, the working group has reviewed and analyzed public comments as well as constituency stakeholder group statements received. For this group, a first draft of the initial report has also been prepared, which captures the discussion and data gathered to date. But the most difficult task is still ahead, which is coming to agreement on recommendations for each of the charter questions, if any. In order to help the group forward in this process, we're now conducting a survey amongst the members of the working group in order to assess their views on the different charter questions in order to determine where there is a common ground and where there's actually further work that needs to be done. This working group had initially planned an open working group session in Nairobi, but unfortunately, due to lack of attendance from working group members, it was decided earlier this week to cancel that meeting. So for those of you interested in the topics addressed by this working group, I would encourage you to follow the deliberations of the working group by monitoring the workspace, as well as looking out for the publication of the initial report, which will be accompanied by a public comment period. So next up is the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group. As a background, the observation was made in the GNSO Council that the registries and registrars seem to lack uniform approaches in dealing with registration abuse. But the question was also asked, does this actually matter? In addition, what role should ICANN play in addressing registration abuse, and what issues, if any, fall within the scope of GNSO policy development? So in response to these questions, the GNSO Council tasked a pre-PDP working group, so please note that this is not a policy development process at this point in time, to gather further information on issues such as what is the difference between registration abuse and domain name use abuse, as distinguishing the two is important in order to determine whether consensus policies can be developed or not, and what is the effectiveness of existing abuse policies, and would there be any benefits to having uniform provisions in registry and or registrar agreements in relation to abuse? As you can imagine, these were not simple questions to answer, and the working group made use of several sub-teams to conduct some of the legwork on these questions. And now, after many months of hard work, the working group has published its initial reports for public comment and review earlier this month. So the report itself consists of over 100 pages which detail the deliberations and findings of the working group on the different issues outlined before, as well as an overview and description of the different abuses the working group was able to identify. And much of this information serves as a backdrop to the focal point of the report, which are the recommendations that are now being put forward by the working group for public consideration and comments before finalizing these and submitting those to the GNSO Council. Recommendations included relate to issues such as cyber squatting, where there is a recommendation to initiate a PDP to review the Uniform Dispute Resolution Process, or UDRP. Recommendations in relation to who is accessed, and malicious use of domain names, etc. You see some of the other issues here listed on this slide. And many of these recommendations are unanimous consensus recommendations, but there are also a number where no unanimous consensus was reached, and alternative views have been expressed. So the working group is therefore especially interested to receive public comments and views on those recommendations where there are different proposals. So, as mentioned, a public comment forum is now open until the 28th of March, and everyone is encouraged to submit their comments there. You see the link here on the slide. In addition, the working group will be organizing an information session in Nairobi on Wednesday, 10th of March, from 4 to 5:30 in the afternoon local time. And following the closing of the public comment period, the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group will review and analyze the comments received and update the report where appropriate in view of submitting a final report in time for consideration by the GMSO Council at the ICANN meeting in Brussels. And with that, I'll hand it over to Margie.
Thanks, Marika. I'm going to talk to you about some of the policy initiatives that I've been supporting. The first one is the GMSO Council has recently approved a policy development process, a PDP, on the issue of vertical integration between registries and registrars. And this is the issue regarding whether there should be rules or restrictions on a registry's ownership of a registrar or vice versa, or if there is common ownership, whether there should be additional restrictions or requirements such as equal access or non-discriminatory terms. And so that is the focus of the policy development process. It's just getting underway, and it's important to the ICANN community because, as many of you know, there's the new GTLD program is currently underway, and ICANN has proposed in the past and will propose models on how to deal with the distribution of new GTLDs. This is one of those issues that needs to be resolved before the new GTLD program can be launched because the terms, whether they allow separation or cross-ownership, would be incorporated into the registry agreement that would be signed by the registries for the new GTLDs. It's important to note that the GNSO in its prior deliberations for the new GTLD program did not include recommendations specifically on this point. And so the question remains whether the GNSO Council thinks it's prudent to come up with a uniform policy that would apply across the board to all GTLDs, not just the new ones, but also the existing ones. And these are some of the issues that the PDP group will be evaluating. Currently, there's no uniform approach or understanding with respect to the issue of vertical integration, and for that reason, the GNSO Council felt it was important to look at the issue and provide guidance. Recent developments, if you want to learn more about this issue, there is an issues report that provides the background on the issue and provides some of the reasoning behind the current situation. Many of you will have questions on how this affects the new GTLD program. And as you read the issues report, you'll note that the policy development process is on a separate track from the new GTLD implementation process. In other words, the proposals for the new GTLD program will proceed, and if the GNSO Council comes up with recommendations in a timely manner that are approved by the Board of Directors of ICANN, those recommendations would, depending upon when they are approved, be incorporated into the new GTLD program. The question is whether they would be implemented in the first round of applications or a subsequent round, and that really depends upon how quickly the GNSO Council can come together and produce recommendations on this issue. When the PDP was launched, the GNSO Council recognized that there's a need to pursue this issue quickly and set a timeline for 16 weeks to complete the policy process. So how can you participate? As I indicated, this will be a very active policy development process to be completed in 16 weeks. Currently, there's a drafting team finalizing the terms of the charter. As soon as that charter is approved by the GNSO Council, there'll be a volunteer recruitment for individuals that may be interested in participating on this issue. There will also be public comment forums to provide your viewpoint on this particular issue. It's also important to note that we encourage the community to participate in the new GTLD implementation processes. A lot of the meetings in Nairobi will focus on this so that you can have impact on the earlier rounds of applications in the event that the GNSO Council is unable to produce recommendations in a timely manner. I also want to turn to the work that's being done with respect to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. We call that the RAA. As many of you know, the RAA is the agreement that ICANN signs with each of the registrars that authorizes them to be an ICANN-accredited registrar. And that document is a standard document that describes the rights and obligations of a registrar. It is updated and not very often, and we're in the process right now of identifying possible amendments to the RAA. There's a working group that's convened that consists of members of the GNSO community as well as the at-large community to evaluate what would be appropriate additional amendments to the RAA. The group is considering things such as terms that would provide better tools to obtain registrar compliance. There's suggestions for additional protections for registrants. And there's also a series of recommendations that deal with additional security requirements and due diligence on registrars for consideration in the new form of RAA. In addition, the working group has also worked on something called the Registrant Rights Charter, and that is a document that describes all of the rights that are referred to in the RAA as they relate to a registrant, and that will be a useful tool for registrants to really understand what registrars are obligated to do and with respect to domain name registration. That document is being finalized and will be finalized shortly. There is also something called the Aspirational Charter that is also being developed primarily with the at-large community. And the idea there is that there may be additional protections that are not currently in the RAA that might be highlighted and useful for additional consideration for future amendments. The next steps with respect to this project is that the list of RAA amendments will be finalized shortly. The working group is coming up with a methodology to rank the amendments, high priority or low priority, and they will produce a report that will be sent to the GNSO Council that will describe these amendments and make suggestions on how to finalize them in the future. The next issue I wanted to talk about was new GTLDs, and specifically the special trademark issues that the GNSO Council has evaluated. And to provide you some background, as many of you know, with the new GTLD program, one of the areas of concern that has been identified as an overarching issue is how to protect trademarks in new GTLDs. Specifically, there's a concern that there may be a higher incidence of a cyber squatting and infringement in a larger namespace. About a year ago, a special group referred to as the IRT, the Implementation Recommendations Team, was convened, and this group comprised mostly of trademark experts that produced a series of trademark-related recommendations for the community to consider. After feedback, when the initial report was published, it became apparent that some of the recommendations did not have consensus. And the ICANN board, in trying to address these issues, reached out to the GNSO Council to ask them to provide further input on specific portions of the IRT recommendations. And this included a proposal for a trademark clearinghouse, which would be a database that could be used, a centralized database that could be used to collect trademark our registration information to make the new Sunrise processes more efficient. And there's also a recommendation for a uniform rapid suspension procedure, which would be a takedown procedure, a very quick one, in instances of clear and convincing infringement in new GTLDs. So the GNSO responded to the board's request and put together a group of volunteers from a broader section of the community to evaluate these recommendations and to come up with something that would potentially have greater consensus. And they were able to do that and produce the STI report, which is, you can read it at the link that I provided on the slide. ICANN staff took those recommendations and revised their proposals to incorporate the STI recommendations. And there will be a session in Nairobi on Monday afternoon to explore the latest recommendations. And we certainly invite you to participate in that, whether remotely or in person, to provide your input on whether or not those additional proposals are acceptable. There's also a public comment forum that has been opened with respect to the recommendations, and I have provided the link there. And now I'm going to turn it over to Liz, and she'll talk to you about WHOIS studies. Thank you.
Thanks, Margie. Good day to everyone, and thanks for the terrific turnout today. That's really great. The first few of my WHOIS studies are basically just providing general background, and then the later slides will provide an update on each of the study areas that the GNSO Council has asked staff to look into. As you know, WHOIS policy has been debated for many years. I should take a step back and just say WHOIS does provide public access to contact information for registered name holders, and the requirements for WHOIS are specified in ICANN agreements with registrars and registries. But WHOIS policy has been a concern for quite some time. There are many competing interests with very valid viewpoints. For example, law enforcement, many intellectual property owners, and cybersecurity experts want to improve the accuracy of contact information in WHOIS. There are many individuals who have registrations, domain name registrations, and privacy advocates around the world who are concerned about privacy protection, particularly noting differences in privacy regimes in different countries. Governments are quite concerned that their legal regimes be followed in the context of WHOIS. Service providers are reluctant to absorb new costs related to WHOIS, and many registrars and others earn revenue from various privacy services. So in light of this, the debate has really not led to new consensus policy. And as a result, the GNSO Council identified five WHOIS study areas that they hope might result in study data that would provide an objective, factual basis for future policymaking down the road. So the Council asked staff to take a look at these five study areas and determine the cost and feasibility for conducting each and report back to the Council so that they could decide what, if any, studies should be conducted. So the next part of this presentation is just an update on each of those five study areas, beginning with the WHOIS misuse studies. These are a group of studies intended to assess the impact of public WHOIS on increasing harmful acts. One study that was proposed would survey registrants and registrars and also research and law enforcement organizations about instances or cases that they've experienced or are aware of where WHOIS, public WHOIS data might have been extracted for the purpose of conducting a harmful act. The second study would compare harmful acts associated with public WHOIS data versus non-public WHOIS addresses. We the staff, decided to use an RFP approach, a request for proposals, to determine the costs and feasibility of the study area. And we did post a request for proposals and received three responses. We are in the process of analyzing those responses. We're actually just about done with that, but unfortunately just couldn't quite get it done in time for the deadline for the Nairobi meeting. So I hope to provide a little more detailed update in Nairobi, but by the end of March we will have an analysis and some costs to provide to the Council on Who is Misused. The second area of study that the GNSO Council asked us to look at is a kind of range of studies looking at how registrants are identified in WHOIS and the extent to which domain names used by commercial entities are not clearly identified as commercial entities in WHOIS. Perhaps their identity is obscured or suggests that the registrant is a non-commercial entity. And then also would correlate that to the use of privacy and proxy services. So we also used RFP approach to try to get guidance from expert researchers on the cost and feasibility of doing these studies. We issued a RFP in October. We received 5 responses. We are just finishing up this analysis that unfortunately we couldn't get done in time for posting for the Nairobi meeting. But again, I hope to provide some high-level information in Nairobi and provide a report to the council shortly thereafter, hopefully by the end of March. The third area has to do with several facets of proxy and privacy services, and I've categorized them as privacy and proxy abuse study, and then separately a privacy and proxy reveal study. We are thinking that we would use the RFP approach here as well, but RFPs have not been posted yet for these two studies. The privacy abuse study, or proxy and privacy abuse study, would really look at the extent to which domain names are used to conduct illegal or harmful internet activities, and the extent to which those are registered via proxy and privacy services. Now, we think this could be challenging because of the need for assistance from many input sources and would likely need extensive community participation, but we're still just scoping that RFP, and we do hope to release that later this month. The reveal study, and calling it reveal kind of for short, would measure the responses of proxy and privacy services to requests to reveal information about the registrant or licensee of the service. This study is challenging because it would seem to require that there be actual victims of actionable harm to originate the reveal request accompanied by evidence of harm. So we're continuing to assess how we might be able to approach that study to make it a viable study. The fourth area of study was a request to examine basically a technical analysis of how various client-side software displays non-ASCII registration information, that is input into a registration, say, using non-ASCII character sets. We've decided to put this study on hold for the time being. Pending some work, there is a board-convened internationalized registration data working group that is a joint working group between the Security and Stability Advisory Committee and the GNSO, and this group is sort of at the early stages of considering, you know, what we should require from internationalized registration data, and we'll also address technical questions regarding how data elements might be extensible to accommodate users who would benefit from registration information displaying in familiar characters from local characters and scripts. So while this work is underway, we've just temporarily put that study on hold. We're hoping that the guidance from that group might either preempt or help conduct that study. And then the last area of study was a request that the GNSO Council made subsequently. These first study areas I've been describing were requested in March of 2009. This particular request was made in May of 2009, and it's a little bit different. It asked staff to compile a list of WHOIS service requirements or potential WHOIS service requirements based basically on two areas or two categories. One would be requirements that exist in WHOIS today. It's specified in the RAA and registry agreements. And the second sort of category of potential WHOIS service requirements would be gleaned from policy discussions that have previously occurred over the years with regard to WHOIS. And rather than taking an RFP approach or addressing, we basically decided to move ahead and conduct this compilation ourselves, and the staff is very close to producing a first draft of this compilation. And we're hoping, again, we kind of missed the deadline for Nairobi, but we should have it released later in the March timeframe. And our next steps would be to solicit input from the GNSO Council and from other SOs and ACs about anything we may have overlooked in this compilation, and also seeking advice about the format of the compilation and whether this meets the expectations that particularly the GNSO Council had in mind when it requested these studies. So that's a summary of the five study areas. There will be, and clearly there's more information forthcoming in the near term. I will be giving an overview of the WHOIS studies twice in Nairobi, one at the Saturday GNSO working session at, I think, 11:15 local time, and then again at the GNSO's public meeting on Wednesday. And again, I hope to provide a little more information about what we are finding in terms of our analysis of the first two study areas, but you'll be receiving a full report on that later this month. And that concludes my presentation, and I'm going to turn it over to Bart Boswinkel now. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. I'll take you through some of the major CGNSO activities between the Seoul and Nairobi meeting leading into the Nairobi meeting. The main focus has been on the IDN CCTLD policy development process, the delegation, redelegation, retirement working group, strategic and operational planning, and I will briefly touch upon the other activities going on and which will be on the agenda of the CCTLDs in Nairobi. First of all, the internationalized domain names, country code policy development process. It's been going on for quite some time now. It has two major areas of attention. One, the first one is developing the overall policy for the introduction of IDN CCTLDs. This is the broader framework for the fast track as well. So what will happen and why it takes so long is the CCs have decided to take in the experiences of the fast track process, which includes the advisory work of the IDNC working group, the fast-track implementation plan, and the current, the first applications and how that went on, and that, say, the overall policy has to address some of the issues that came out of the implementation as well. And the second area of attention is, as some of you may know, the CCNSO was created with just CCTLD managers in mind, and with the first IDN CCTLD managers put into the, or the first IDN CCTLD is put into the route, hopefully this year, we will have IDN CCTLD managers, and they need to be included one way or the other in this CCNSO. So that's the second point of attention of the IDN CCPDP, but it has to wait on, say, some of the outcomes of the first area. Where are we currently with the IDN CCPDP? This week, the working group designed or developing the proposals for the overall policy had its final call prior to the Nairobi meeting. What will happen is by tomorrow the chair of the working group will produce an initial draft which will touch upon the main areas which need to be addressed and some proposals to address it for the overall policy. Two of the main areas is there is the IDN CCTLDs will be considered, or the proposal is to consider them similar or the same as CCTLDs, and as a result, the current mechanisms for delegation, redelegation, and retirement of CCTLDs will apply to IDN CCTLDs as well. So that's now a proposal, and there will have some other consequences to that as well. But that will be in the draft interim paper. If you look what will happen at the CCNSO meeting, the proposals will be discussed on the Wednesday morning session of the CCNSO in Nairobi, and so that's the proposals for the overall policy, and it will focus on some of the experiences of some of the applicants under the fast track, so that can be used as input into the overall policy as well. So how do I get involved? It is participate in the public comment period on the draft, the chair's draft paper, and the discussions at the CCNSO meeting if you're interested. So that's on Wednesday morning, and you can find all this on the calendar of the CCNSO website. A second point of attention or focus of the CCTLDs since Seoul has been redelegation, retirement of CCTLDs. The CCNSO created a working group, and this working group is focusing on delegations, redelegation. One of the starting points, and probably of interest of for those who are not so familiar with the CCTLD environment, this is from the IANA glossary, these terms. What is a delegation? It's an assignment of responsibility of the domain, so of the TLD to a trustee, redelegation, the transfer and retirement, the decommissioning. What makes it very difficult is, although these are the IANA glossary terms, it is already clear that some of the people on that working group tend to disagree with these definitions. One of the reasons is that, and probably the main reason, is delegation, redelegation are fundamental, and policies are fundamental to CCTLDs. It is almost of existential nature for them. So a change or a definition or a change in the definitions of delegation, redelegation may have a direct impact on their position within a country and on their relation with ICANN. So if you look at what does this working group do, it is more a fact-finding and identifying issues. Excuse me for a moment. Sorry. This working group needs to advise the council whether to launch a PDP, and that is based on their fact-finding and the issues they identify. It is not, the working group is not in a position to propose any resolutions or to these issues they've identified. That is, if it comes to a PDP, that is for the PDP. Where are we now? The working group will publish a progress report tomorrow as well. That will be the focus of the discussions in Nairobi. The working group also organizes a workshop on topics they have identified in Nairobi. And unfortunately, progress is not as fast as as they hoped. They've encountered the working group, and that's in the progress report as well. They've encountered two major difficulties in their fact-finding mission. Is there is no clear authoritative source for policy or documented policies, and there are different documents policy documents and guidelines which they have to deal with, and there is no real publicly available source on the current practices of regarding delegation, redelegation, and retirement. So they have to work through the different documentations and in asking questions, and they're really on a fact-finding mission. The workshop on topics in Nairobi is open for everybody, and it focuses on the working group wants to understand what the issues are. Some of the CCTLD managers and other stakeholders in the CCTLD environment are looking at, if you talk about delegation, redelegation, and retirement. How do I get involved? Participate in public comment periods and participate in the public sessions in Nairobi. As I said, there is a workshop on Sunday afternoon, and there is a CCNSO meeting session on Tuesday afternoon as well, and you can find these on the CCNSO website. So these are, what I've just addressed, are two of the more substantive topics in the CC environment. Now I want to move on to one of the working groups, which I think is illustrative of how the CCNSO operates, and it's the Strategic and Operational Planning Working Group. So what does this working group do? It tries to facilitate and increase the input of the CCTLD community into ICANN's strategic and operational plan. And how does it want to accomplish this? What is the output of the working group? It's summaries. It is organized summaries of the ICANN strategic and operational plan. It is organizing workshops at CCNSO. Meetings, and it's conducting surveys. So what has been done recently, it has conducted a survey on the strategic topics that are perceived to be relevant to the CCTLD community, and it is not just a topic so on the perception, but also a more in-depth analysis and on consistency, whether the CEC community thinks that what they perceive as the strategic priorities, whether they were funded, and whether the ICANN is achieving these strategic priorities as well. The summary of the results of this survey are available on the CCNSO website, so you could have a look at it, as well as the results of the workshop conducted by this working group in Sydney. The second thing, what has been done recently, is providing a summary and questions relating to the current draft strategic plan, and this was used this was sent and made available to the CCTLD community to structure their input into and assist them in their input into the current strategic plan process. So, and if you have a look at the CCNSO website, you can find how they work on this. And if you look in the near future, say one of the things that will happen at the Nairobi meeting is the Strategic and Operational Planning Working Group will organize a session with ICANN CFO to go through the operational plan and as an focus on the areas of attention of the for the CCTLDs in the upcoming the draft operational plan. Again, how do I get involved? Yeah, especially with this one, you participate in. You can participate in all the open sessions of the CCNSO at the NICAM meeting. So, in this particular case, at the Nairobi meeting, the session by the SOP working group will be conducted on Tuesday morning from 9 to 10. If you're interested, and this is some references to this working group. So. I just touched upon three major areas of the CCNSO. I just briefly want to touch upon some of the other activities in the CCNSO. And so you have a bit of an understanding of how the CCNSO and the CCTLD community works. One of the major other working groups is what is called the Technical Working Group. It organizes a session. It organizes a session on Mondays, and it's focused on sharing operational and technical information among the CCTLD community. And they often invite members of other communities to either participate or give a presentation. A second, I would say, point of focus is the Incident Response Planning Working Group. This was this working group was established in the aftermath of the Configure issue. It was felt necessary by the CCTLD community to start planning responses to Configure and other DNS attacks in a coordinated and cooperative manner. So the incident response planning is setting up mechanisms to make this possible. In a third type of working group is what is called the Wildcard Study Working Group. This was established after the Sydney meeting or in response to one of the board resolutions. And first of all, it is there to provide information to the CCTLD community on the impact of wildcarding. But secondly, it wants to engage with CCs who use wildcarding and to try to understand why they use it and to provide this type of information to the CCTLD and broader community as well. How do I get involved? Attend Tech Day if you're interested. The agenda will be up shortly. The Tech Day is always on Monday. And the CCNSO meetings, they are open for everybody, and they will be conducted on Tuesday and Wednesday. That's all for me, and I now hand it over to Olaf.
Thank you very much, Bart, and hello, everybody. Now we'll concentrate on the last N in the ICANN name, notably numbers, like IP addresses. So essential for the inner workings of the internet, and of course requiring policies as well for assignment and allocation. And that's the area for the Address Supporting Organization, or ASO, and we'll deal with it. I'll talk a little about policy issues, but first of all, some background about the ASO, since it's quite a different structure from the CCNSO and the GNSO. Well, first of all, the supply chain, if you like, for IP addresses. End users usually get their IP address from an ISP, which in turn gets IP addresses in big blocks from a regional internet registry, or RIR, which in turn gets addresses in really huge blocks from the IANA function within ICANN. And in that food chain, if you like, well, the RIRs are really the essential actor when it comes to the development of policies. What is then an RIR? I've never managed that acronym myself, actually. It's a regional internet registry. Regional organizations, which have existed in most cases longer than ICANN, and based on membership from the ISPs, and there are five of those. For Africa, there's AFRINIC. For Asia-Pacific, APINIC. For North America, it's ARIN. For Latin America, it's LACNIC. And for Europe and the Middle East, it's RAI. They also cooperate in a global manner in an organization called NRO, or spelled out, the Number Resource Organization. Now, the ASO, what is that then in the context? Well, it is actually a memorandum of understanding between the NRO, the RIRs, and ICANN, where NRO is appointed as fulfilling the function of the ASO, the Address Supporting Organization, which in the policy sense has a particular role to play when it comes to global policies. Now, simple, isn't it? Well, one thing to remember for you all, the policy development takes place within the regional internet registries. Do remember that. Okay, let's talk a little about the global policies. I mentioned that. What is that then? Well, you should see within the RIRs, the real vast majority of policies that are developed are policies for regional application. They could be different for each region, quite frequently are. In some cases, there are coordinated policies across all regions, which then are called coordinated policies. And there are global policies. But global policies in this sense only means that the policy has an effect on the IANA, IANA's activities for IANA allocation to the RIRs. So it is a very limited definition, actually, when we say a global policy in the addressing field. And, of course, in those cases, they have to be agreed upon in a similar fashion by all the regional internet registries. There are two such proposals in pipeline, one for ASNs, or autonomous system numbers, and another one for recovered IPv4 address space, and we'll talk a little more in detail about those, starting with the policy proposal for ASNs. Now, autonomous system numbers, a bit arcane perhaps, but those are the addresses that the ISPs use among themselves to route traffic between them. So they take care of addressing on the highways, let's say. And there is already established policy for ASNs, a global policy, which also includes a transition from 16-bit to 32-bit ASNs, since we're running out of space in the 16-bit field. But there was a reality check, I think a year and a half ago, when it was realized that all the 32 bits met with problems in practice due to legacy equipment and legacy software. So there was a need to defer the full transition to the 32 bits with a year. And the current proposal only covers that particular deferral. And it's very far advanced. All the RIRs have agreed on the text. It's just the formalities that remain. And it says on the slide that a proposal has been adopted in three RIRs. Actually, since the day before yesterday. It's adopted in four, and the fifth is absolutely imminent. So the final adoption will take place in the very near future. What happens then? Here comes the role of the ASO in the strict sense. Once it has been adopted by all the RIRs, a proposal then goes to the NRO and the ASO Address Council for what could perhaps best be called a due diligence step, where they verify that all the procedural steps have been fulfilled properly. And once they're satisfied with that, the ASO Address Council forward the proposal to the ICANN board for ratification, and once ratified, it's implemented by IANA. And this is likely to happen within the coming months, that it appears on the, before the board, and well, there's no reason to believe anything else, and it will be very quickly implemented as well. Now, that was pretty straightforward. The second proposal is about recovered IPv4 addresses. Well, there are certainly IPv4 address policies, global policies in place, but this particular one addresses the situation when the IANA free pool of IPv4 addresses has been exhausted. Which I think we're on 22 so-called /8s left as of today. So it's getting depleted, and once it has been depleted, this proposal would give IANA a role to be able to receive and reallocate address blocks that have been recovered in the RIRs. It can do so already with the current policies, but not with less than a so-called /8, which is 16 million addresses. And that's very unlikely that a return of such address spaces will be done post the depletion. So smaller address blocks could also then, according to the proposal, be returned. And the current status of this, it has also advanced pretty far, but it has reached some kind of bifurcation, because there are two proposal texts that have been adopted. One version in three RIRs already has been formally adopted, and a slightly different one within the ARIN region. And, well, the fifth one, yeah, that's right, where it has not been advanced past the discussion stage, pending what the outcome will be in the other regions. And the difference is perhaps very, very small. It's just a matter of a word. Whether it be voluntary or mandatory in a particular circumstance. So it's just one word, but fairly important at that. So the major issue right now is whether the two versions can be consolidated into a joint global policy proposal put forward in front of the ICANN board. And the jury is still out on that one, and there is the dialogue between the RIRs in order to achieve some solution of this. But the outcome is far from certain. So, next, if you're interested in global policies or the regional addressing policies, well, how do you then proceed? Well, it's very, very straightforward. You just contact your regional internet registry where you happen to be located. And they have very well established bottom-up policy development processes. And all right, their members may be the ISPs in principle, but their policy development processes are wide open for anybody to take part in, and they conduct multiple meetings, open meetings per year, as well as all of them have open mailing lists. You just can register and be part of the policy development. So that's my prime advice for those of you who are interested in getting deeper involved into this. And with that little advertisement, I conclude from my side and hand you back to, I think it's Scott Pinson, that will bring you do some final concluding remarks. Scott, over to you.
Thank you very much, Olaf. This is Scott Pinzon. I'm the Director of Policy Communications, and we are nearing the end of the prepared portion of the presentation and are looking forward to taking your questions in a moment. But first, I want to make two quick announcements about how to stay updated. If you've enjoyed the information you're giving here today, you don't always have to wait until just before an international meeting to get more policy updates. Assuming most of you are aware that we also have a monthly publication called the Policy Update. It usually comes out between the 15th and the 22nd. And updates on all these issues you've heard about today. If you haven't looked at it in a while, it's a very different publication than it was a year ago. We have streamlined it. It's better organized and more easy to look into the particular SO or AC that you're interested in. So there is a URL for you there, and I encourage you to check it out. And then we have one other announcement that I'm kind of excited about. Because you're in this presentation today, you're hearing the first public announcement of a new podcast that we have begun producing. It will go live on the website next week. But if you are familiar with RSS feeds or you use iTunes, you can hear it now. The purpose of this podcast is, you know, when you come to ICANN, especially if you get involved in a topic that people have been discussing for a while, there are loads of papers. None of them are really written for a newcomer. It's very difficult to find your way into an issue. And for those of you who are leaders in your constituency or your AC, you probably have newcomers and they don't quite know where to get started. Well, that's what this podcast is designed to solve. In each episode, we take one issue and we answer five basic questions about it, such as what is it, why does it matter, who does it affect. And as a result, each episode is under 20 minutes, with the thought being that you could get up to speed on an issue during a coffee break or a 30-minute lunch or something. So we will be producing a new podcast on a new issue every month. You can look for them at the first of the month. And if you are in North America, Australia, or the UK, you should also be able to find it in iTunes by going to their podcast section and simply searching on ICANN Start. So we hope you'll check that out. Almost the entire policy staff has contributed to this presentation. We just wanted to show you who some of these folks are. As I said, we will be taking questions in a moment, but we might not be able to get to them all. So we wanted to let you know that you can always address all those people in the previous two slides by sending an email to policy-staff@icann.org. We all watched that email alias, and the appropriate person who tracks whatever subject you ask about will be happy to respond to you. So if we don't get to your question in the next 10 minutes, you can always send your question there. So with that, I would like to open the floor to your questions. You can either type it in the chat box, or you'll see down in the lower left-hand corner there's an icon of a person with their hand raised. If you would use that button, then I can see who would like to ask a question, and we can open the floor to you. So at this time, any questions are welcome.
Scott, if you permit, this is Olaf. I saw a question in the chat box concerning IPv6. Nothing about IPv6. Well, from a global policy perspective, well, there is, since almost 3 years, a global policy for IPv6 in place, implemented, and all of the RIRs have received their /12, which is a humongous number of addresses. So they have for, and nobody has come back yet to ask for more to IANA. So just to say a few words on IPv6, since that was missing. Thanks.
Okay, I see Evan has raised his hand. The floor is yours, Evan.
Can you hear me on this call? I'm calling in from an alternate bridge provided by Adobe Connect.
I can hear you.
Okay. I asked a couple of questions in the chat, and they have to do with the podcasts. I appreciated when you brought us the first one at the last meeting. I wanted to find out how soon there's going to be transcripts available of them, mainly because most of the people in at large are not native English speakers. This information is really, really useful, and it's even more useful to people that are new to ICANN and don't speak English.
Thank you for the question, Evan. We started the podcast with the notion of also having them done in French and Spanish, and we've been put on hold for this trimester because of budget shortfalls. I have just put in for the first official episode to be transcribed, and we are expecting to have that up somewhere around March 23rd. And the best thing you can do to facilitate us, you know, getting permission to have them in other languages is to send an email to start@icann.org and just voice your support that there should be translations. And if we can show strong community support, then that can help us push it through the budgetary process.
And the last thing I'll say before I put my hand down is just, if there's a way that you could put the podcast up on the ICANN website so people that don't have iTunes have easy access to it, that shouldn't normally be a problem. So I'd really suggest that, ICANN's got a very good website, and there's no reason that it shouldn't make the stuff available there.
Thank you for that comment. We certainly agree. Actually, it was supposed to go live this week, and I don't know why it did not. But if you will watch icann.org/learning, we have a new e-learning page that will aggregate webinars and the podcast and other audio briefings that such as the kind at large has been doing, all in one spot. So icann.org/learning, it should be live by Monday. I see some notes of support for the podcast in the chat box. Thank you very much. And please also feel free to suggest topics that you wish we would cover for your various groups, because we really much want it to be on point for your needs. Watching for further questions at this time.
Can you take questions by voice?
Yes, you're welcome to. You have the floor.
It's Marilyn Cade. Thank you for the briefing. I was impressed by the level of detail, but also might make a suggestion, if possible in the future, to be able to allow questions, even one or two, right after each presentation. My comment relates to looking at the agenda for Nairobi and noting that there are very few scribing notations. In the workshops for Nairobi, many of them on the very topics you've been covering, and to follow on to the comment made earlier, it is certainly many of our interested business user members are not native English speakers,
And they often do turn to the transcripts for factual updates as well as just to be able to follow a topic. And, of course, the transcripts are available historically. Is there a way to address having transcripts for more of the meetings other than those that are just in the main meeting? And I know you may not be able to answer that today.
Thank you for the question. Rob Hogarth will be filling in on the public participation aspect of Nairobi. So, Rob, I'm going to ask if you would like to respond to that.
I would love to respond, Scott, but I don't have an answer for Maryland. I'll certainly follow up with Nick Ashton Hart. Just FYI, a lot of the scribing from a technical standpoint is actually going to be taking place remotely. And Nick has been working very hard this week at putting together the information on the website about the remote participation opportunities and capabilities. So I'll certainly follow up. He has done a really good job of updating the website on a lot of that stuff. So I'll see if we can come up with a means to answer your question, Marilyn, so that many more people can hear what his answer is.
Thank you.
Just a quick time check here. Officially, the presentation is supposed to end in 3 minutes. Many of us on the policy team have some time flexibility, and we will stick around and answer questions somewhat after that time. So if you have time to stick around, we'd love to be with you. And I see Aubrey has her hand up. Aubrey, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I had asked this question in the chat, but I think it got lost. I think the idea of the podcast and the education stuff is great. I think it's something that's been needed. However, one of the things that I'm wondering about is in preparing these things, is there a practice of basically having them listen to auditions to vetted whatever word works in front of some of the community experts and leaders before they go live, just to make sure if there's any ambiguities or any issues that are perhaps still controversial among the participants, those things can be flagged so that what goes out is basically as neutral as possible, understanding that, of course, staff tries to make it as neutral as possible, but sometimes we don't know when we're not being neutral. Thank you.
Thank you, Aubrey. That's an excellent question. With the podcast being such a new effort, all the processes are not in place yet, so I don't have an official process for vetting it yet. But you are correct. It is very much our interest in keeping it neutral and just factual. I think my best suggestion would be if you would be willing to listen to a couple of them, you might suggest to us ways we can have it vetted. The other thing we still need to develop is the first few episodes are all policy team members, and we would like to also involve the community in a fair and representative fashion. So all suggestions along those lines are quite welcome. You can send them to me specifically or send them to start@ICANN.org, and we will try and improve as we go along. The floor is open for more questions.
Can you hear me? This is Jolly.
Yes, the floor is yours.
Well, I could also, if you're into outreach here, what I could also suggest is you have an ICANN, I think, Facebook page. There are ways you can use a system called Networks Blogs to feed your podcast automatically into your Facebook page, and then people will just pick it up straight. You know, that's the whole point of having a podcast. People don't listen to them on iPods. The RSS is the point, but once people subscribe, they keep receiving this stuff. Small suggestion.
Thank you very much. And on this URL that is showing on the slide, it does give you an opportunity to select what kind of RSS reader you would like to subscribe in. So iTunes is one option, but obviously your favorite one can also be used. So thank you for pointing that out. And I haven't got it hooked up to Facebook yet, but that is on the agenda. Appreciate it. right, I think we are ready for our last question. So whoever raises their hand next is going to get the final question, and then we will end the meeting. Do I have any takers?
It's Meryl, and I have another question.
Certainly, Meryl.
It, again, is about the Nairobi meeting. In going through the information that is available on the detailed agenda and looking for documents and links, in particular, I noticed that the board committee reports on Friday are nearly PowerPoint bullets, that PowerPoint documents with bullets that actually don't have substance to them. Will there be more detail in the meeting reports, or will the content of those reports be only available on Friday?
Marilyn, this is Rob. If I can clarify your question or ask you to clarify it, are you talking about the slides of the actual reports of the various chairs of the SOs and ACs?
I am, and if you look at them, Rob, there's like a bullet point that said something like the committee considered X topic. That there's no detail behind that, and in preparing for the meeting, which I tend to do by reading as many of the detailed reports ahead of time, and in helping the business constituency to think about which reports to focus on, normally, if there's going to be a board committee written report, I just would need to know that and make sure that people are aware they need to download it.
Yeah, I'll look into that for you. Nick and I have discussed the SOAC reports by the various chairs.
Yeah, those are typically developed on site.
Sure, exactly. And, you know, those will be developed, you know, within the, you know, 12 to 18 hours prior to that. Those sessions. I don't know. I'll follow up with Nick and Diane with respect to what the plans are for the board committee reports. Most of the board committees typically meet the weekend before the ICANN meeting starts.
Right.
And so I would be surprised if you had anything prior to that. Unfortunately, Dennis dropped off the call, so he would probably have been able to give us a better perspective on that. So I'll follow up with Nick and Diane on that question.
Thank you.
All right. With that, folks, I think we are going to call it a meeting. Thank you very much for your participation. It's been our privilege to serve you. And there will be slides posted later today, and then this recording will have to go through some conversion process, but it will appear on the website later on. So thank you very much for your participation, and we will see you around the community. Good day.